Good evening. This is KGVM 95.9 on your dial from Bozeman, Montana. And the show tonight is Meditation for Self-Realization. Well, I got all that out on my own tonight. How about that?
You remembered.
That should be a heartwarming show. We've got a guest today. And it's the all energetic Stella Laura, who is connected to all of the energy of life. So no matter what you call her, she is a form of a bunch of molecules in this huge universe of molecules and atoms.
Yay!
What a neat show, huh?
I'm not going to ask you about your high school nickname.
I might.
All right.
So before we do get started, and before we really introduce Stella Laura, we are going to do a pause. We're going to do a brief meditation so that we can all come together tonight and be one. One heart, one mind, one breath. So let's begin with centering ourselves with some conscious breathing, some deep inhalations and slow exhalations. Now, if you're driving, I'd like you to keep your eyes open. If you're not, please relax with your eyes closed. And relax your facial muscles. Relax your jaw and your tongue. And be sure to sit with your spine erect. And drop your shoulders, feeling your shoulders relax. And close your lips while you take a slow, deep inhale and an even longer exhale. Feel your chest rise on each inhalation and feel your chest fall on your exhalation. If your mind wanders, merely bring it back to your breath. And maybe we can do an inhalation and visualize a golden lotus blooming in our hearts. And as we exhale, maybe see one of those petals fluttering down into an ocean that's calm. And let's take one more deep inhalation. Feeling our hearts expand, and an exhalation. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes.
I think Stella fell asleep.
Well, we didn't really formally introduce you, Stella Laura.
Oh.
Stella Laura was a virtual friend, and then we were able to meet Stella Laura in
Field of Awakening.
Yeah, in our Field of Awakening experience in Sun Valley, Idaho last fall. And we had the honor of meeting her personally. I forgot to ever thank you, Stella Laura, for how when we were having dinner, how you took care of, because I didn't want to eat any meat, and there was another woman that didn't want to eat meat, and you took it upon yourself to make sure we had protein. And that was so dear to me.
Oh, bless your heart. I do remember that. I was thinking about our dinner at the Indian restaurant myself, just maybe a few minutes ago before we gathered here. And I remember how precious it was to be with you and to walk with both of you. But I remember I've been thinking a lot about vegetarian lately and nutrition and how anything with the central nervous system experiences great pain and suffering when it's killed for us to be able to eat it. So I've been thinking a lot about that and how living a vegetarian lifestyle would be in complete alignment with a beautiful state. So I think often of you and how beautiful. You didn't have a lot of things on your plate. There weren't a whole lot of options. And I remember just how gracious and grateful you were for what you did have. And I've thought about that probably over 100 times.
Wow.
Since we had that meal together. So I just wanted to share that with you. I don't remember being proactive.
You were proactive.
But I do remember being concerned that I didn't see a lot of things on your plate. And I was, and you're such a lovely, you know, petite person. I wanted to make sure that you received full energy from your nutrition. So,
well, yeah. I appreciate it. You definitely did. Sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
And thank you for the acknowledgement of my choice. Mm-hmm.
I was somewhat gluttonous.
Oh. I think I was too, to be honest with you. I've really been looking at that. So that's some of the work I'm doing right now.
But yeah, it's really nice to kind of bring that point up. I think, you know, it's sometimes we think we need more than we actually need and more than what, and not just in food, but it's a nice mark to remember that in everything we do.
And looking at you with your empty space around you, you have the bare minimals. Are you still in Arizona?
I am still in Arizona. I have not fully relocated. I've relocated most of the stuff, things. But yes, I will be moving to Northwest Arkansas in the near future, and I'm really excited about that. Which kind of, is it okay if I sing a little song for you?
I would love it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, just that would be very song. Great. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say you have a music background, so I would think our radio listeners would love to hear a little song from you, and maybe numerous songs from you.
Well, I definitely want to share a little bit more about getting to Sun Valley and FOA and meditation, self-realization, because that is our connection. Yes. But we are all music lovers. I once sang a little ditty for you on the phone and you wanted Jim to hear it. So I thought this would be a perfect time. The song is called Makua. And on the island of Oahu, the gathering place, Makua is a place, but it also means ancestor. And this song was given to me and taught to me by Mokihana Kayatani, who is a woman that I met on Oahu who used to work with the Hawaiians and also the Hopi people.
Mm.
So I figured this is for you guys.
Great.
A aloha mai. A aloha mai. Mahalo ke yakua. Mahalo ke yakua. Aloha o kaina, o namakua, aloha, aloha, aloha.
Mm, it sounds like a song of gratitude with mahalo in there.
Yeah.
It is
I love
a song of gratitude for the ancestors. And this is the first time in the history of humanity that that song has ever been recorded right here with you guys.
Wow.
No kidding. Wow. Cool. That's fantastic.
How's that for getting the gratitude spread and gratitude and acknowledgement of our ancestors?
Yes.
Yeah, I find it interesting that a lot of Indigenous people and groups really connect with their ancestor as part of their being and their life and their past. And we're just learning that, to really go back and check it out. In fact, we do a check-in regularly. And this morning, Marion reminded me that, and she was just like, so where did you first get that feeling? And it took me all the way back to my dad. And then beyond that, you know, having to do things for an allowance or whatever. And then it got me, after we got done, I started actually going back beyond where that might have come from him. His influence on me, he was obviously influenced by, you know, his upbringing. So it is nice to connect with the ancestors.
Very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I really wanted to ask you was how has meditation impacted your lifestyle, Laura?
I consider meditation to be a lifesaver. Literally. So in 2013, which was quite some time ago, I was in a car accident. And in that car accident, without going into all the details, but to give you the scenario, after the car accident, I would have quite a nice case of post-traumatic stress disorder, mm-hmm. and social anxiety, a suggested brain injury, and I kind of lost everything over the next few months of my life. I lost my car in the accident. Then I lost where I lived. I lost my job, not necessarily in this order. And I also, it was at the end of a eight year relationship. So with that being said, sorry, my phone. It led me onto a path of self-realization on a very deep level. And the first thing that I had at that time that I had been practicing was Buddhism. So I chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, which is, I love that you brought up the lotus, because essentially the street explanation of that would be the lotus that rises up through the mud. Nam-myoho Renge Kyo means. So I left with my Gohonzon, and a couple of my friends helped me move, and I moved to the other side of the mountain. And that would begin the process of recovery. And so I'm going to fast forward. I've always been a very positive thinker, but after the car accident, I had a very difficult time and was in a lot of pain. So I was having a very difficult time having any positive thoughts. So sort of flooded with a lot of negativity and struggling. So in 2020, just before COVID, I had been chanting very diligently and doing yoga and so forth. But I had an opportunity to join online ECHA meditation. And when I did that through the Serene Mind practice And through the peace meditation and many other meditations that I would be introduced to, I noticed very quickly that my brain seemed to really benefit from the meditation, and that I became calm. So I no longer felt this sort of internal, almost a small nervous shaking that seemed to be with me for those 7 years or longer, seemed to slowly be shifting. I said, this is good for me.
Yeah. This is
really good for me. So at that point, also I should back up, the 30 days before I started the Ekam meditation, one of my Buddhist friends said to me, you should chant for 30 days for the biggest benefit in your life to appear. And so, of course, I thought I would win the lottery. $5 million.
Yeah, there goes the money.
I'm just, you know, we'll have, you know, so, and what it was on day 30 was Ekam meditation. So I was
That's when you first were introduced to the Ekam meditation?
30 days after I had started chanting for the biggest benefit of my life to appear.
Wow.
So that's a true story. So I took that very seriously. I was like, okay, this is it. Because what's different today? The only thing that was new, really, that I was aware of was the Ekam meditation. So then that started the whole, that started that relationship. And so last year in September, I've been meditating daily since then, either with the group or on my own. And then when the group around here, the online group that was started around here in Arizona, disbanded, then I joined. That's when I met you guys. So I joined with Leah and Elizabeth and Jim in Space for Grace and started meditating with you every time I can. And so.
So we get to see Stella Laura almost every morning, you know, when we can make it and she can make it. So it's often.
Often, very often. And I look forward to that. And it's, you know, in the past, people used to say, they would say family. And I would get really like, you know, like, don't call me family. Don't push me into your family. But it does feel like family in a good way. And it does feel like we're, you know, cousins or sisters and brothers on this path of liberation and enlightenment. And I don't think there's anything more important to me personally than liberation from suffering and liberation from,
chaos in life,
the chaos in the way that we bind ourselves, like, you know, the bindings, to be unbound, to be truly free, to, you know, love and accept, you know, I'm learning to love and accept myself.
Isn't that beautiful?
Truly.
Yeah.
Instead of just like looking in the mirror and going, I don't know, has nothing to do with that. It's like an internal state of really loving and appreciating and not being at war with myself internally.
Yeah, right.
I can relate to what you're saying, because there was a time when I would look at the mirror and all I was looking at was the image and how the hair was laying. And, you know, early on, my teenagers, is my makeup good enough? Those kind of things. And when I started looking at in the mirror and telling myself I love myself, I had to really look and say, now, is that true? Do you really love yourself? You know, and it took a while to really resonate with that love of self and accepting self for exactly where I am right now.
It's beautiful.
That's
it truly is. I You know, we're talking about nutrition earlier, and this is, my mother's passed on. Her name was Beth, and she was just a beautiful conscious dancer, just a beautiful spirit. And she laughed with wild abandon and danced with wild abandon and, just a beautiful, beautiful person. But when I was at FOA, you know how you go Field of Awakening and you go through some processes for ancestral karma, and you know, there's those different processes that we're going through, and we're experiencing and seeing different things and digging really deeply into the spirit and the soul connection. And when I was just a little infant, my mother by accident almost starved me to death. And the reason I'm sharing this is because I think it's something that I'm kind of processing right now for the first time, but I saw it very clearly in the Field of Awakening. She wasn't producing enough milk. So she just wasn't, her body wasn't responding in that way that most women's bodies respond with.
And she was nursing you.
Yes. So this became quite a complicated thing for a little while. Right?
Yeah.
And it was figured out and then it was taken care of. So I think somewhere inside of the infant version of myself, somehow the largeness that I'm carrying now and working with, learning to accept myself as I am right now, even though, I kind of stopped singing and stuff for a while because I didn't want people to take pictures of me and I didn't want to be seen as a larger person. Okay.
Yeah.
I had some sort of a thing with that. I think it might've come from that not feeling like I was getting enough as a little baby infant. And then my mother, bless her heart, was a fat shamer. So she would always be, she really had a thing about people that were overweight. So she would always say, do they think they look good? I mean, they have a little belly sticking out.
And you were always hearing this thing.
Are you going to eat all of that? You know, and stuff. And so then this is just, and I promise I'm going to stop because I truly loved my mother. So I don't want you to do that. Just truly loved her. But this is something at
this FOA. This is the subconscious. Yeah.
Wrap it around a Prodigy and what happened. And I just absolutely adore Prodigy. And so, and Sarma Darshinaji. So here we are. I'm thinking about all. And so then, I realized I'm carrying that around with me. Like before I learned to really start loving and accepting myself, I was like, well, I can't really go out and sing in public because, you know, I don't look like a supermodel.
Mm.
Right. And then, what was the other thing? There was one other thing with that. And I kind of just lost my train of thinking.
Well, what, not only did you hear it from your mom, but look at our culture.
Well, exactly. So I didn't realize until recently in the last year how much I had bought into that. Because I've always considered myself to be independent, strong-willed. I would never judge someone else by their body type. You know, I'm criticize someone else. But how hard I've been on myself.
Yeah.
You know? And so we're energy, right? So we're energy. So it's all about the energy. And so I am at FOA and we're going through one of those processes, the ancestral processes. And all I can really say is that I felt like I experienced a cosmic rebirth in the presence of Prodigy. Where
beautiful.
I was given the proper nurturing and naturing, right? And the eyes to see myself with love and to be compassionate and kind, right?
It's so big, yes.
Oh, and so since then, it's just been the beginning of just really being able to be aware of just how important it is to love and accept and not compare ourselves.
I certainly.
So I just recently read, I was trying to look it up while you were talking a while ago. And this was just a couple days ago. And there's this big time scientist. He's got all these degrees. And anyway, he came out with an article validating meditation and how it's expanded way beyond just getting calm and how many people are doing it for self-realization, just like we've been talking about. And it's been, and he's shown the scientific proof of it. Of course, in the article, they didn't want to admit that it was a scientific proof, but it's leaning that way, was his verification of meditation for self-realization. So I thought it was a fascinating article, and what you've just shared with us validates that.
Yes, because once the mind is calm enough, it can move into understanding things about ourselves that we would never even consider. And so I'm really appreciating what you shared with us, Stella, Laura, about how between the accident and then in 30 days, your realization was that you needed to meditate. And luckily with Ekam, because now we've met each other.
Yeah, I think the thing that I love the scientific proof, and there are a lot of people talking about that. So I'm very grateful that meditation's not just a woo-woo thing. Like there's athletes and there's, you know, doctors and lawyers and, you know, starting to understand the importance, the Tony Robbins of the world, right?
There you go.
Right? And so, yeah, just not being attached, unconditional love for yourself, complete surrender to that love of yourself, and not in an egotistical way, but in an acceptance, is learning to accept, all that is and not resist.
Yeah, that's huge.
Right?
And then when I discovered that I do love myself, learned to love myself, it's so much easier to extend the love to others. So that was the other question I was wanting you to share. Has meditation had an impact on your relationships at all?
Yes. Yes, incredibly so. I've just recently, probably in the last, again, couple weeks, been faced with some really wonderful opportunities to see what an incredible judge and critic I am.
No. You too?
And so I've really, really been looking at that. And, you know, for an example, I might say, well, this person's been on a spiritual path, you know, walking a spiritual path for 20 years. Why are they still doing this or acting like that or doing that? Or that hurt my feelings. They should know better than that. And so I see what a chatterbox I've been with judgment and criticism. So again, I think it comes to, you know, not being bound and acceptance, right? Liberation. And really, really learning that, being aware, becoming aware, you know, witnessing, becoming a witness to, and being compassionate. So I think meditation has really awakened compassion within me. And the more compassionate I become, the more I'm getting along with everyone. I'm less annoyed, you know, and I'm just starting to see how beautiful each and every beautiful flower human being is.
It's so true.
So yes, I believe that meditation is something that I will practice for the rest of my life.
Well, I'm celebrating that.
Because I want to.
So one of the things that I got an opportunity last night to watch a presentation for Sri Bhagwan. And during that presentation, he brought up a really interesting point that when you can see your thought, then you can feel your senses. And that is enlightenment. Mm. True liberation. Mm. And it reminded me back in this last November, we went to Grand Canyon and we were all journaling and I journaled a little poem. And it dawned on me the last lines of the poem, it was all about being on the rim with all the tourists and the chatter and everything going on. And then looking down in the canyon, and the last part of the poem is, I can see the quiet at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Mm. And I think that's a pretty profound statement, because we were talking about how our thoughts and judgments and everything are directed towards different people. Like you had mentioned, the person that, you know, oh, so-and-so has been doing this for 20 years and he's going to come at me like that with that kind of statement. And, you know, we're trying to get out of these judgments. So I just thought I'd throw that in because I thought it was fitting how if we take that pause and time to kind of really feel somebody's or see the thought that we want to, that we have before we continue on, mm-hmm. really does help get rid of that judgment.
So I'm having a little hard time wrapping my brain around seeing my thought. So basically what you're saying is being conscious of what you're sending out there.
I think observing and witnessing and stuff, but it's really a liberating.
So it's not necessarily a visual experience.
No, it's just a connection. It's like connecting the dots, you know? So like when I looked down in the Grand Canyon that day, I was looking down and I was looking down. We had that little visual of the river way down below, just that little piece. And my thought, I could actually see the quiet of being down there, nobody else around.
Okay.
Does that make a little more sense?
Right.
Well, you know, my supervisor where I'm currently working, I don't know who came up, who says this or where this comes from exactly, but he likes to say thoughts are things.
True. Thoughts we have heard things. That.
So thoughts are things and our thoughts, energy follows thought, then it makes sense that if we can witness or observe our thoughts, we can also transform our thoughts. Right?
And make our reality different.
Right, but also if we're aware of our thoughts, we're able to see our thoughts without talking about like a physical, like
color or
thing, like
yes.
a bottle of water here or whatever, that we can actually catch it before we set it out into the universe, so to speak. Does that make sense?
It does.
That what makes sense. That? Yeah, and when, just recently we watched that teaching by Krista G about mental
health
and the brain waves. And really when you get down to the, if you can live in that theta brainwave or the delta brainwave, all of a sudden you're not in beta where all the thoughts are. Alpha, where you might be expressing thoughts, but you're in that state of really seeing the thoughts and just being. So you're this the being, you know.
Yeah.
And
well, this is a different teacher, but it's still along the same path, I believe. Have you heard of Mohanji?
I haven't, but we studied John C. Lilly, and he was all about the brainwaves and all about that.
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah. So who is this one?
I wrote down something Mahanji said earlier today, and he said, provide for your family per their need, not their greed.
Oh. Mm.
And then he said, rich experiences of life, this is your income of life.
I like that.
Your expenses are your expressions.
Wow.
Your bank balance is your memory. So I feel like that's in alignment with what we're talking about right now. And so when I have been judging and the judge and the critic, which I know we all have, but I think I've been, I might have been a judge on a little higher chair.
I don't know. We'll have to measure our chairs.
My critic has a whole tribe of critics. And I've been, such a perfectionist, not just with myself, but with absolutely each and every person around me. And so I'm really seeing that those expressions, okay, if my expenses are my expressions, that's also my karma. And so I'm starting to understand that when you put your expression out into the universe, now it may be one thing when I'm creating music, right? And I'm singing or I'm chanting or I'm reciting mantra or, that kind of thing. That's one thing. But when I'm annoyed, right? And then I'm like, I'm just so annoyed with that person. I just can't believe that person. How could what am I actually putting out into the universe? And then I don't understand why I don't have better karma. I mean, I do all good things.
Yeah.
My expressions have had some pretty heavy weight to them, right? I mean, when you're with another human being, you can feel their hatred, anger, expression in a negative way. You can feel it.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm talking about?
Sometimes you can actually see it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go.
Like energetically terrorizing another person.
Mm-hmm.
That's not peaceful. That's even if you don't say it and you're just thinking it, it's still violence. And so owning that, accepting that, not resisting that, allowing that to, oh my goodness, that is such a weird thing. Poof, just letting it float by or whatever. These are the kinds of things that I believe meditation, the purpose of meditation and self-realization is to develop clarity.
Clarity and some conscience or consciousness.
Faith, right?
Yes.
And be able to do something with it. So this is so synchronistic that you're talking about this and that you read that poem, because this morning we had a discussion. You're laughing.
I forgot to do
it. It's true. It was wrapped around my prosperity and where I could put in a block. And it's like, oh, I gotta do this in order to get that. And then right away, I was like, cancel clear. I want to have gratitude for what I do and what I do, how it serves others. And because if I would have hung out in that negative thought, mm-hmm. now I'm blocking that.
Yes.
That need or that prosperity. And so when you read that poem, it was like so synchronistic to, it cemented the gratitude.
Well, oneness, right? Our oneness.
Oneness. Well,
oneness, it's, right.
It's funny that he chose to go to that one, because this morning I also had, when he said what happened this morning, I pictured how at one point I got really impatient with the fact that he was correcting me. he was asking me, why don't you ever? And I jumped at him and said, oh yeah, never. I never. But I, that whole impatient little scenario you did.
So I watched my thoughts and kept quiet.
And once he became quiet, it was much easier for me to become quiet too.
Isn't that truth?
I imitated
it's so
him.
So simple, really, when you think about that exchange. It's like, now why would I want to respond and get in conflict with Marion over something that was so minuscule?
Our egos, I really think that, like, moving from the ego, once you were able through meditation to start really seeing that our ego, you know, is the fear and wanting to stay in control and not wanting accepting any change and not seeing things in color and just really like it has to be this way because the ego wants to stay in control or telling us you're not good enough to do that. Like, who do you think you are? You're going to India? India and meditate? You know, what? Yes, you're going to India. Absolutely. Who is more deserving of going to India for tapas than Marion? I one person.
Stella Laura.
I would like to go.
And Jim, too.
The poem, I don't know if I shared this poem, but I do want to share this poem because I think it's very in alignment with what we're talking about. It's a poem I picked up somewhere along the way from Tibetans. And I don't really remember how I know this poem, but I think it's a prayer of Tara.
Okay.
It's a compassion is open, free, and limitless. Indescribable and utterly beyond comprehension. Compassion is like sunlight, awakening, bringing joy to beings. Its beauty is like a rainbow, lifting the hearts of all who see it.
Oh, that is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Yes. For our listeners, I must tell you, I wish you could see Stella Laura because not only was it the words, but the beaming smile on her face just fills my heart.
With eyes so closed beautiful. Yet, so she wasn't reading it.
No, she wasn't.
It's ingrained in Stella Laura.
Oh, I would like you to send that
stuff. Oh, absolutely.
That
sure.
is beautiful. That yeah. and the other one too, the little line you about the bank account and our.
Oh, that was Mahanji. Yes, Mahanji. Oh, I was wondering what you were referring to as a poem. Yes, I guess that does kind of read like a poem. Now I understand.
Yeah, maybe yeah. a little bit of prose.
Yeah, I thought that was really
valuable.
You know, all of those things were really, and then you know, on my way back from Sun Valley. I have to tell you, I went to the Mystic Hot Springs, you know, I went to some hot springs on the way to Sun Valley. I drove by myself and when I went to the Field of Awakening and on the way back, I went to the Mystic Hot Springs and I stayed in a bus. I stayed in the nature bus that night.
They nice. Had
buses there. And so I stayed in that bus and on the way back, I realized that my heart song, because we do so much heart work, that my heart song really needed trees and water, that I love where I'm at. I've spent most of my life in Arizona. I'm originally from Minnesota, but I really miss trees and water and that I relax more around trees and water. So by the time I got back to Cottonwood, which is just outside of Sedona, I knew that we were going to be relocating Max and I. Max has already relocated to Northwest Arkansas with our three cats, Lily, Arturo, and Joya.
Oh, nice.
And, so what I wanted to share about that was that I really gathered that I am not my possession or my position while I was in Sun Valley. And that once I could accept that, then it made it a lot easier for me to want to sell this house and simplify my life so that I can spend more time meditating, more time with poetry and painting and singing and dancing, all of the things that I love to do in my divine time. I feel like the arts and meditation that really strengthen the connection with the divine. And I just wanted to thank you for the kind things you said about my closed eyes and my expressions. and because I truly do love sharing these things. So to know that I am a light in the world when I share what is my true passion is very encouraging for me at this point in my life. and that I truly look forward to living my divine purpose. And I'm grateful for this time that we've had here. And I can't wait to hear everything about your trip to India.
Okay. And,
I think this is an interesting spot right now to have you describe and explain your spiritual name. If you don't mind, because
I'm happy to
fit in, you know, the Native Americans, Red Cloud, Sitting Bull, all those names meant something. There was a significance to it.
Well, thank you. First of all, just let me say very quickly, my birth name is Laura Elizabeth Hainaniemi. My confirmation name was Catherine.
Wow.
My first nickname was Orla, which was from my uncles who liked to tease me about the spelling of Laura, L-O-R-A. Oh. So they called me Orla, O-R-L-A. Give me a noogie on my head.
Oh, jeez.
That was my first nickname. I was probably maybe two.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it would move forward from that. So in December, I believe, I went through a ceremony with Ekam, with the Dasas, and you send them your birth name and most people call me Stella or Stella Laura, and that's another story how all that, but so they gave me the name of Tejasvi, and that's T-E-J-A-S-V-I, Tejasvi, which sounds very much to me like to just be.
Yeah, it does.
Tejasvi. So I have been a very busy doer my whole life. I started doing as a very young child with the age of 8, producing muscular dystrophy carnivals and festivals and music and events, and all those things have continued on ever since. So Tejasvi means brilliant, energetic, luminous. So when I received this name, I cried. And I cry often when I say the name to myself. And I feel like it releases the cortisol.
Wow.
Tears release cortisol. So I keep that as a very internal name for myself. And if I ever start to get a little bit like wondering who I am or if I matter or if I make any kind of difference, when will we ever have world peace? I remember that peace starts within. And if I am peaceful, we're just a little bit closer to world peace. So my responsibility is just my own piece of red thread, and I am Tejasvi. So as I remember, I am Tejasvi, it is that extra little thing that helps me to calm, to be solid, to remember, to release, to let go, and to shine from within, to be the bright light from within, internally bright.
And you do, Stella Laura. It's been life-changing to meet you. It truly has.
Oh.
And Stella Laura does have a CD that she gifted us with called Take the Time. How fitting is that? And so we do take the time to listen to her CD, and it is beautiful.
Well, it's quite an array of music.
It is. It's a variety pack.
Yeah, it really is a variety pack.
Thank you.
So you got a little taste of welcoming our ancestors at the beginning.
Do you want me to do one more?
Yeah, sure. We'll do a grand finale here.
Okay, I've never played this.
Oh, look at that. Oh,
good.
I'm here. I made this drum.
Oh, nice. What's the skin?
Well, it's actually buffalo.
Oh, nice.
It's actually buffalo. And
I have one too.
I had never made a drum before, so I have to tell you that I made this drum with the Sovereign Sisters.
Oh,
they're from California, Northern California, and Oregon. Mother and daughter team. Anyway, they travel around teaching people to make drums. The buffalo was sourced from Native people up in Washington. But they were here, and I was part of a group of people. Anyway, long story short is I had no idea about making a drum because I'd never made a drum. And most people would make maybe deer or maybe horse. But buffalo is a thicker. It's difficult and challenging to work with. Mm. And so I was quite the sacred fool.
Oh.
They were laughing at me. Oh, she thinks she's going to work with buffalo, never make a drum. Going to work with buffalo, huh? So, but it worked out very well.
It looks like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I prayed the whole time, you know, to and worked with. So, but anyway, so I'm going to do my best to play this drum and share this little song. It's called Junkyard Lotus.
Okay.
And it is actually on the CD, but I'll just tell you very quickly. In 1997, I had a wonderful opportunity to go to New York City and stage manage some plays for the Lucky Devil Theater Company.
Ooh.
With no experience in stage management.
Wow.
A friend of mine, Roya, invited me to come to New York because she'd seen my work or had been a part of some of the work of music production events. So she was just sure if I could work with 100 musicians, that I could definitely work with 40 actors.
Oh, boy.
Well, they're different things. They're totally different things.
I would guess.
Totally different things. I will say, luckily, I always carry some sage with me, and that would be needed at times. But at the end of the plays, I made it through it, and the director didn't kill me, and that was wonderful. made it through the whole thing. It was at the Angel Orensons in East Village, which doesn't actually exist anymore. It was owned by two sculptors from Spain, Angel Orensons. Anyway, at the end of the play, I had 37 cents to my name. I had a cardboard painting of Zeus that I'd been given from the plays.
Oh my gosh.
And I had a broken drum. And I received this song. I received this song from the divine on my way to hear the drummer from the Jimi Hendrix Experience, Buddy Miles.
Oh my gosh.
It goes like this.
How exciting.
Can you hear the drum at all?
Mm-hmm.
I've never sang this song with this drum before, but here we go. Broadway, Bubbles, New York City, child. Open wide, got Sesame Street. Got John Zorn, Mad Monk, Polonius Velvet Underground, and Spalding Art of the Great Joan Smith. Ugly Eddie, he be sitting on a corner, got no place left to go, they've got one brown pigeon just scaring away all the crows. There's human hummingbirds and peacocks whirling to the left. They got him, the shoofy shofar, St. John Divine, Anger Gilly, Coleman Hawkins, saxophone just juggled the mystic air. Charles Bukowski ain't got nothing on us here. Better keep the late night, keep the jazz alive. Lotus in the junkyard. A lotus in the junkyard. A lotus in the junkyard. Just let your lotus shine. They got twiddly-dee, twiddly-do. Butterfly Park. It's outside the Harlem Apollo. Josephine Baker on Broadway. Satchmo run for king. And they say, la-ee-la-la, la-ee-la-la. Then ee-la-la, 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 ee-la. Sitting bowl. Walking clown actress Aisha Quinn. They've got these mud capes and banana crepes and Monty's Lonnie Star.
Lee Grant, Perry, Woody Allen, Tom Brown, and I swizzle ahead from Mars. Show them all, go alone, slowly open the door. Oh, Roy Powell, take the axe, throw the key on. Just point to my drum, but Coleman, Hawkins, Sax, Tony juggled the mystic air. Charles Bukowski ain't got nothing on us here. Better keep the late nights, keep the jazz alive. Throw this in the junkyard. Throw this in the junkyard. A lotus in the junkyard. Just let your lotus shine.
Oh, how fitting.
Yeah.
How fitting for you to choose that one to sing after we did the meditation with our lotus in our hearts.
It sounded like it was influenced by Allen Ginsberg.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, that's a beautiful culmination of our interview with you, Stella Laura.
Yeah, we really appreciate your time spent with us.
Thank you.
And all of our listeners.
And we're going to sing you a song.
Now we're going to sing you a song.
And you, you could pitch in on the second verse, probably.
Okie dokie.
You might even know it. Who's leaving?
Here we go. I'm going to leave because I'm tired of being all yours.
Thank you. Okay.
May the long time sun shine upon you, all love surround you, and the pure light within you guide your way on. May the long time sun shine upon you, all love surround you, and the pure light within you guide your way on. Guide your way on. Guide your way on. Hamsa. You are in the divine. Thank you so much, Stella Laura.
All right.
Okay. We'll see you all next week. Or we'll be with you all next week.
And don't forget to meditate.
Yay.